This is the true story.
True story.
Seven strangers picked to live in a lie.
This is the true story of one podcaster picked to live in an apartment and have his voice taped to find out what happens when he stops being polite and starts going heel. Oh, yeah.
Cole, look at this. He's going for the cover. It's Scott. He's got him. Scott Jaeger gets the victory. 1, 2, 3. He's won it.
Oh, yeah, baby.
This is the heel world.
What is up, everybody? Scott here. Welcome back to The Heel World, my podcast on the Challenge Mania podcast feed, entirely about professional wrestling. If you're not here for wrestling talk, go ahead and hop off right now. Or leave your phone playing so we get the ad plays. Whatever you want to do. Hopefully some of you guys listening to this watch the Royal Rumble on Saturday night. Numbers are showing that 2 million plus, I believe, tuned in on Peacock in some capacity. I watched at a packed bar here in New York City, and I know there were at least two of them showing it that were sold out, that probably just had Peacock running, and that got counted as one view, but there was, I mean, hundreds of people in this place. Really fun show to watch in a jam-packed bar. I had vowed never to go to a Royal Rumble in a stadium again. I hate stadium wrestling. I'm still going back and forth on whether I'm going to go to WrestleMania, but last year we went in St. Louis, and the Rumble itself sucked. The seats, although they were $300 each, and on the floor, technically, you could not see shit. But watching this in the bar, which was super fun, I had such FOMO about people who were in the house in San Antonio, and I thought that the show was great. So going to mainly talk about the Rumble and the fallout and things like that. I got a bunch of questions from Instagram, at Scott of Jaeger, that I gathered over there. I'll read those. But first, I just figured I'd give my Rumble review. Because I think that these Rumble results were the chalk, if you will, right? They're what the majority of people predicted. They're what, if you tried to put in a bet on this, which I think is always super silly, you would have gotten the worst odds for. Because I do think they logically made the most sense as winners. So this year, it was Cody Rhodes winning the men's Rumble, Rhea Ripley winning the women's Rumble. That's what all of us predicted. And that's what happened. And that doesn't necessarily need to be a bad thing. I think sometimes in years past, they've gotten a little too cute with surprise winners and things like that. Last year, if you remember, on the Heel World, I predicted Ronda Rousey and Brock Lesnar would win. Going into Rumble Sunday, Ronda was unannounced. She was a surprise. But if you're reading through the tea leaves and you're kind of plugged into the wrestling world, you maybe saw that coming. And Brock, of course, wasn't in the Rumble match because he went into that show as the champion. And, of course, lost the championship to Bobby Lashley earlier in the night, comes out as a surprise entry in the Rumble, ends up winning it, and wrote to Roman Reigns at Mania. But, again, if you pay enough attention, you had kind of already heard the plan was for him and Roman, and how do you get there? I figured it would be something like that. So those were sort of predictable while also not being predictable on the surface, maybe to the average person. And I think last year's Royal Rumble was universally panned. I think a lot of people hated it. The execution, the sort of random nature of a lot of stuff, the Shane McMahon involvement. So predictable doesn't necessarily mean good or bad. I think in this instance, it meant pretty damn good. So those, most of you guys know, I'm a big Cody Rhodes guy. Was not a big Cody Rhodes guy his first WWE run, right? He just never jumped off the screen at me, and wasn't his fault. It was mostly the way they used him. But that being said, I mean, I just, you know, was never the biggest Cody Rhodes guy. I wasn't really watching during his first run and Legacy and all that stuff. And, you know, obviously I caught some of the Stardust stuff and, you know, it wasn't for me. I was a huge fan of Cody Rhodes post-WWE. Loved what he did with his indie run and making the list of opponents he wanted to take out or get in the ring with, and watching from afar when he wrestled guys like Kurt Angle, and then you know, getting the pleasure of seeing him on many Ring of Honor shows, and, you know, him getting involved with the Bullet Club and ultimately becoming very cool on the indies. And then, of course, you know, using that to connect with the Bucks and Kenny. And then that, of course, becomes the impetus for AEW. And it's well documented that I'm a big AEW fan now. But over the years, Cody and AEW, it was an up and down, I wouldn't want to say up and down relationship with the fans. It was sort of an up and down and then down and down and down and down with most of the fans. I was never one of these people, but you know, very early on, he became so inevitable as one of the faces of the company and a sort of, you know, I don't like the term white meat baby face, but white meat baby face who was going to refuse to go heel, that the audience turned on him and were really just like anti Cody. And I remember talking to West Side Gun, not to name drop, but I was at an AEW show here in New York. It was the first Arthur Ashe show, and I was sitting right behind him. And he came out for his match against Malakai Black, and everyone was just booing him ferociously. And I had been right before that talking to him, and you know, and I mentioned, man, these people hate Cody. They just hate him. And he's like, yeah, I'm one of them. You know, he hates Cody. And this is someone who loves AEW. And again, people had gotten to the point where they were able to separate the fact that, look, Cody was very responsible and integral in the first, in the launching of AEW, the forming of AEW. He was the guy out front doing a lot of the conference calls at first, was one of the faces of AEW. And people were able to separate that from, hey, I also want to boo this guy. He's getting too predictable. He's really corny. A lot of his promos sometimes would be a little bit overly emotional, or he would try a little too much, trying to like solve racism in the body of a promo. A little bit cringe at times, but again, sure. And you know, he kind of became a bit of a John Cena, minus the like super marketability and success. Remember, like Cena was this polarizing champion in WWE who was just making money hand over fist. Kids are buying all the merch. And when he would come out, you'd have the boos, but you'd have the cheers. And you'd have the John Cena sucks chants, but you'd have the let's go Cena, Cena sucks. And even though there was a very vocal group of the crowd that was bored of the same old Cena and the same old moveset and this and that, you had enough kids that it was still good for the company. And even though I always thought it'd be great to have a heel Cena run, the fact that Vince stuck to his guns and never turned him heel, you know, what could have been, who knows, but financially it was fine, I guess, for them, right? I always wonder, like, you know, WWE, I think, has taken a turn for the cool in the last, you know, if not, certainly recently in the last year, but then even before this, around 2013 and 15 with NXT, I think got a lot of the older fans back in and things like that by embracing indie wrestling and more serious storylines and things like that. I do think some of us might have come back early if you didn't have this long Cena run of just like this kind of like bright colored baby face, selling merch to kids, you know, wrestling in his jeans, doing the corny mannerisms. So there's, yeah. You know, AEW, though, very quickly pivoted off of Cody. He early on had this stipulation that said he couldn't wrestle for the world title. So, you know, he had a great run early where he was wrestling guys like Jericho and he had a big program with MJF. But then after that, it was, you know, he was like an upper mid-carder and he was doing great work. But now the sort of the polarization of Cody and the boos, they're not really leading to big pay-per-view buys and things like that. And so, you know, he definitely lost his luster, you know, in AEW. And even though I was someone who didn't boo him ever, I was very much well aware that he had lost the hearts and the minds and the cheers of the internet wrestling fan, which is the main undercurrent of AEW supporters. He had lost them. I think a heel turn would have been great, but he never did it, didn't want to do it. You know, he was the face of a lot of their charity work and a lot of their, you know, work with, you know, kids and things like that. So he decides to leave and go to WWE, which I don't know that I even predicted that it would have went this well, but goes to WWE and instantly, you know, takes all the street cred that he left WWE with, that he started AEW with, and that he had over the course of a couple years lost in AEW, takes all of that and instantly brings it over back to WWE as sort of the face of non-WWE wrestling, or someone who left WWE, got cooler, got more street cred, did his own thing and came back. And now he's got the big WWE production. He's got the WWE lineage. He's got all the built-in storyline with Dusty Rhodes being his dad and him being one of the, you know, one of the people who helped launch NXT and start the careers of so many people like Seth Rollins to Becky Lynch to Charlotte. And the fabric of Cody Rhodes is very much a part of WWE as much as WWE is a part of Cody Rhodes. Yet he instantly just by starting over and walking into that arena stadium in Dallas last April, he became cool again. He went from being the least cool guy in AEW and the least AEW guy in AEW to the coolest and the most AEW guy and the most indie guy and the most internet guy in WWE. And so comes in, beats Seth, instantly into a three-match program with Seth, you know, and you know, I'll be honest, like, in an alternate universe where he doesn't get hurt, is Cody able to ride the wave and be Cody and be the Cody we just saw on Monday night with, again, a promo that I thought was great, but bordered on maybe being a little too much. You know, he's tying in all these things, talking about, you know, when I looked out there, would I ever tell myself the person saying all those wrestlers' names, that's Brandy, would one day be my wife? And he's bringing in his wife and he's bringing in his kids. And I lost a 275-pound best friend, but I gained a 16-pound best friend. Talking about his dad, talking about his daughter. And it's a lot. And I think it's great. And I think they're well executed and well written. But again, these are the same promos that once people had turned on Cody, they turn on the promos. Now, if he doesn't tear that pec in June and he's cutting these promos for 9 months and he's on Raw beating Dolph Ziggler and beating Finn Balor and beating so-and-so and this and that, whatever, would the WWE universe have already sort of turned on Cody the way that the AEW universe had? And would they have been able to execute the Rumble victory on Saturday the way that I think they did? Especially when it's going up against this storyline with the Bloodline and Sami Zayn that people love so much that you have a lot of people, you have a very vocal contingent of people who want and think that Sami Zayn should be the one to dethrone Roman or even the one to swoop in and maybe be the challenger at WrestleMania. Now, I think that in an alternate universe where Cody's not the new man on campus anymore, right? He's kind of old news, not old news, but he's been in WWE for almost a year now. I think in an alternate universe, if Cody hadn't have torn that pec, that man, this Rumble Saturday, where he ends up winning, and I know Sammy wasn't in the Rumble, but again, a Cody win is still not what people would have wanted from Sammy. Obviously, Sammy not in the Rumble, but still to not even be in the Rumble. I wonder if we would have had a Roman Reigns at Philly situation or a Batista situation the year that everyone wanted Daniel Bryan to win. Would people have not embraced this Cody win? Especially when, take Sami Zayn out of it, a lot of people are still kind of coming to terms with the fact that they're not getting Roman versus Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And so all that kind of disappointment on The Rock end, we kind of wish we could reward Sami in this great program with all this story with the Bloodline on this end. And then in the middle, you've got someone who, Cody Rhodes, kind of just makes the most sense. I'm telling you, he's the guy who made the most sense in AEW, had to write his way out of being in the title picture over there. But here, of course, walks into the title picture. I think the injury couldn't have come at a more opportune time. He ends up going out there, wrestling with the torn pec. It's a visual that I believe will be immortalized forever. He already said at the press conference, we're going to get a boatload of toys with the pec injury. And I think that's pretty cool. But I know wrestling fans. Wrestling fans are fickle. Wrestling fans are quick to turn on you, especially when you feel inevitable, when you feel boring, and when there's something more interesting at the other end of the tunnel, something that fans feel more responsible for. Now, I know fans do feel a little bit responsible for this Cody run, because if they didn't embrace him as openly as they did when he walked into that stadium last April, I'm sure they would have pivoted off of Cody. But I personally think they decided, hey, we're going to give the Rumble to Cody. He got injured. And then obviously by being off screen, obviously couldn't do anything to tarnish that. And so he was able to walk right back into San Antonio, win the Rumble. And now it looks like we're getting Roman and Cody. I personally think it should still be Roman and Cody. I love the Sammy thing. We'll talk about that when we get back after this break. But I think that the Sammy thing, the Jay thing, the Bloodline thing, Solo Sikoa, Paul Heyman, it's brilliant. And it doesn't need the belt. You know, it definitely doesn't need the belt in a Sammy versus Roman scenario. So we're going to hear from our sponsors. We're going to come back, talk a little bit more about the Rumble. I could go for it. I'm feeling so good about WWE right now. I've honestly been on Ticketmaster looking at tickets for WrestleMania, which is absurdly priced. And to sit anywhere near the ring, it's thousands of dollars. But I've already got my tickets for the WrestleCon Super Show on Thursday that I'll be going to before our party, which, by the way, if you're in LA, please come to our party 8 to 11 on Thursday, March 30th. And then I also got my tickets to ROH on Friday. So I'll be going to those. But Mania, I want to go now. I want to see Cody and Roman. So anyway, okay, I've said too much.
I've said too much. My name is Paul Heyman, and I've said too much. Let's go to a word from our Heel World sponsors.
Okay, so yeah, so gonna go through the Sami and Roman stuff and you know, kind of fantasy book that whole storyline. But real quick about the Rumble. So I'm a big Rumble guy. I love Royal Rumbles. I think I recently rewatched 2008, which I think is firmly my second best Royal Rumble. You guys know I'm a Flair guy. I'm a 92 guy. That's number one for sure. Don't care. It's Flair. But 2008 is so great. And I forget if I actually watched 2008 when it aired, but I've watched it a couple times since, obviously. And everyone remembers the Cena surprise and the Cena return, but even before Cena, it's like a top 10 Rumble. You know, it opens with Shawn and Taker, and they're in there for three quarters of the Rumble, and then you got so many contenders in there at the end, from Batista and Triple H and Umaga, and Triple H coming in at 29, I think made the Cena surprise at 30 so great. And then I think they have the Batista, the great stuff with Batista and Cena and Triple H, and then again with Triple H and Cena. So just a great Rumble all around that I think gets dumbed down to just being about the Cena surprise and the MSG crowd. But and JR is awesome. I think there's a lot of commentators. I think they do the thing where both commentator sets are in it. But if you haven't rewatched 2008, watch it again. But so I'm a big Rumble match guy. And I thought this one, I think, is probably the second or third best modern Rumble. That's to me like a Rumble after 2010, right? And I think the best ones, I think 2018 is the best one. Ends with that great Final Four, Roman, Cena, Shinsuke, and Finn. I love that one. I think it was from Philly. And then recently, 2020, the one where Edge came back and there was that great Brock run at the beginning that gets ended by McIntyre. McIntyre ends up winning the thing. That's a good one too. I think I'm still going back and forth whether that one or this one would be my second favorite modern Rumble, but modern Rumbles aren't great. You know, it's rare that they really nail it. And I thought this one was really good. It was definitely absent of the usual amount of surprises, you know, OG cameos, things like that. We got Booker T. Edge, I guess, could be considered a surprise. We didn't know he was going to be in it, but he makes a lot of sense, obviously. Logan Paul, you didn't know he was going to be in it, but I love putting Logan at 29 if you were going to go Cody at 30. I don't know that Cody at 30 was the best idea, but it's fine. I loved the Gunther and Sheamus start. I loved Gunther going the marathon, Gunther breaking the record. I love giving the rub to Gunther. I mean, to me, in a Royal Rumble, you have the opportunity to really shine as many as fifth. I mean, a great Royal Rumble, you know, because you can get a shine out of a Royal Rumble by A, winning the Rumble, sure. B, almost winning the Rumble. C, going farther than people would have assumed, right? So right there, just like people have you pegged for someone who's going to come in and get thrown out immediately, then maybe it lasts 15 minutes, right? Okay. Then obviously there's going the whole gamut, right? There's going in first or second and, you know, the time records and things. That's another way. There's throwing a lot of people out. There's throwing a particular person out. Somebody throws out a Brock Lesnar or a Bobby Lashley or a Braun Strowman, you get that rub. There's doing an amazing spot. There's that great moment with Ricochet and Logan Paul. That spot was so cool, and I hopefully will remind myself to talk about Logan Paul. Maybe I'll do it right here, but even Ricochet gets that, you know? There's being a surprise. There's comedy spots. There's fun ways of not exiting the Rumble that Kofi has been known for, and of course this Rumble in the last one, he's kind of botched it, but there's so many ways in a Rumble where you can shine a guy or a gal. And that's what I love about them. And a great Rumble, like a 92, like a 2008, and like this year's, I think does that. So that's why I really like this Rumble. I thought Johnny Gargano did 30 minutes, overachieved. He got a lot of rub. I thought Logan Paul, that spot, first of all, is something you're going to see for the rest of your life, you know? And he's in there with the, even just being in there mingling with a ring full of WWE talent, and he's in there not wrestling like a celebrity, wrestling like a WWE talent, I think he got the rub here. Gunther clearly got the rub, okay? You got, you know, Sheamus had a good run. The Judgment Day, of course. Dominic Mysterio comes out of this thing a bigger star. Edge got a great moment. I mean, everyone but, and even Miz coming in and getting a little bit of a focus before getting an early exit, I thought had a moment. You know, the only guy I really come out of this thinking, man, did he get shortchanged, was Montez Ford. It looks like he's in a qualifier for the Elimination Chamber. Looks like he might be in that match, albeit for the U.S. title. But, you know, I was surprised to see him spend as little time in the ring as he could have and as he did. But Logan Paul. I was trying to think of the comp for a Logan Paul. Not in, like, celebrity that is this good at wrestling, because that's just not a thing, right? There's no comp there, okay? There's no comp. I'm literally just trying to think of the comp for what celebrity in prior generations you could even compare to Logan Paul, in that we've had celebrities dip their feet in the wrestling water, okay? Recently, Stephen Amell. Stephen Amell's pretty good, right? As far as celebrities or people who wrestling isn't their job, he's pretty good. His schedule is free enough, and he likes wrestling enough that he's dabbled. You know, he's had some matches and definitely goes and supports a lot, and he's obviously been on the show Heels, and he's definitely... But here's what I'll say about Stephen Amell. Nowhere near as famous as Logan Paul. Means nowhere near as much to young people as Logan Paul. Logan Paul is arguably the most famous, if not one of the most famous people, to those under 30 in the world, especially in this country. I'm not going to say in the world, because I don't really know if his reach is international. But here in the U.S., he is one of the most famous people. If you take a 7-year-old, a 10-year-old, a 15-year-old, a 20-year-old, a 25-year-old, and a 30-year-old, and you put them in a room, and you show them Logan Paul, they all know who Logan Paul is. If you show them Stephen Amell, maybe one or two people know. Okay, so that's recently. You've seen people who are maybe as famous for things like, you know, you've seen Jay Leno for hosting The Tonight Show, dabble, I did a tag match of the 90s. Karl Malone, of course, everyone knows Rodzilla, Dennis Rodman. Lawrence Taylor had a pretty good match, decent match at WrestleMania 11. But these people dabble, okay? They are primarily a football player or a boxer or whatever they are, a boxer or basketball player or TV host, whatever. They do one or two appearances and they go back to doing what they do. Never have we had someone, and this is just basically a product of the world we live in today, where a guy like Logan Paul, I mean, he's a self-made man, you know, basically a YouTuber turned professional boxer turned influencer. He makes his own hours. He does whatever he wants to do. You know, this guy is making millions and millions and millions of dollars, and it's all kind of tied together, and it's tied together by what he wants to do. And thus, he's not a movie star. Okay, so he's not someone like even Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who loves wrestling and comes from wrestling, who cannot get away from his acting gig to even wrestle or get into shape to wrestle, so the rumors say. Logan Paul makes his own schedule, right? Makes his own rules. And thus, whether it's because he likes it or whether he's getting paid well, he wants to wrestle. I mean, in 2022, he wrestled The Miz. First he did a tag, so I guess he did a tag match with The Miz, right? Then he wrestled The Miz, then he wrestled Roman Reigns, and then I know it's early 2023, but he just wrestled in the Royal Rumble. To be as famous as Logan Paul is and as important to pop culture as Logan Paul is, and also have the time to wrestle that amount and be as good as he is, that's unfathomable in a different generation. Because I was trying to go through, I'm like, who even had? No one has. I mean, who was as famous as Logan Paul is now in 1998? Carson Daly? Okay, it would be like Carson Daly, and that's not even a great example, but let's say Carson Daly, right? In the 80s, Bruce Willis. I mean, these people, A, would not have been as good as Logan Paul, but even if they were, would they have been able to not make Die Hard with a Vengeance and instead wrestle four times a year for WWE? No. Would Carson Daly have been able to? No. That's why you mainly see celebrities dabble, and that's why celebrities aren't as good at this stuff as Logan Paul. And also, just generationally and culturally, it is one of, I would say, the benefits of, I mean, look, people scoff at the idea of like people being quote unquote famous for nothing, right? Which again, I mean, look how talented the guy is. Clearly it's not for nothing. But in the age of the Kardashians and the age of the Logan Pauls and the Jake Pauls and things like that, I mean, this is certainly a pro to outweigh the cons of like, well, he's not a good actor. He's not a good, this, what's he famous for? Well, he's someone who clearly people like watching do his own thing, like watching, have a good time, like listening to his podcast, whatever he does. The fact that he is an entrepreneur, that he is a self-made businessman, self-made celebrity, gives him the flexibility and the opportunity to do something like this and not half-ass it. And clearly is he not half-assing it, because that spot with Ricochet was the highlight of the Rumble and of the night, maybe, and maybe of the year, is a visual you're going to be seeing forever. That poster of just them in the middle of the sky. And not for nothing, he makes it further across the ring than Ricochet. Not for nothing, out of the two, Ricochet is maybe the most athletic wrestler in the world and has been regarded as so for 10 years. And Logan Paul looks more athletic than him, and he's bigger than him. So it honestly, it's there's no comp for it. But so all these people got the rub in the Rumble. The Rumble, everything, everybody, I think, came out of it. And no one came out of it worse for wear. Nobody came out of it looking stupid. And that's how I feel about the Women's Rumble, too. I feel like the Women's Rumble, which doesn't get as much praise, I thought did a good job of, I don't think anybody looked bad. Even Chelsea Green, who got the comedy spot, the early exit, shouts to Chelsea Green being back in WWE. Sounds like she's going to be doing some sort of a Karen character. So that fits this new Karen character of, I don't know, her name's not going to be Karen, but, you know, can I speak to the manager kind of a thing? And this is her number one thing to complain about, is how quickly she exited the Rumble. I liked that these Rumbles were booked with purpose. I thought everybody looked really good. I thought it was maybe a little bit stepping. The fact that you had Gunther run the table, and that was, he got that, and of course comes in second in the first Rumble, and then you had Rhea and who was it? What is her name? Liv Morgan, do it again. That was a little redundant for me. I was thinking maybe you could have had him come in a little later, but that's fine. That's nitpicking. I thought the ending was great. I thought Asuka looked like $1 million, had the cool makeup and things like that. I liked the finish with the mist. So I was a fan of both men's and women's Rumble. And that really, I think, when you have those Rumbles are hitting, the Mountain Dew match can be the dumbest match in the world, and look, it was. And the Hardy performance was lame, and look, it was. I called him mid-rock. But when you have two solid Rumbles like that and the main event angle that you had, I mean, talk about, I thought, a great A pay-per-view. Great pay-per-view to watch in a crowded room. Would have been a fun pay-per-view to be at as well. So I just think it hit it on all cylinders. Now, before we get to the questions of the next segment, I just want to talk about the main event. So main event played out pretty predictably as well. You had Roman beating Kevin Owens, and then basically him and the Bloodline are jumping Kevin Owens. He's tied up ECW style, and he wants Sami Zayn to hit him with a chair. Instead, Sami Zayn hits Roman Reigns with a chair, turns on the Bloodline, and they all start beating the crap out of him, except Jey Uso decides to leave instead. What's Jey going to do? Looks like we're going to find out on Friday on SmackDown. But this storyline's great. I got to give him all the credit in the world, as most people have done. What I'll say, though, is this to me, here's how I would write this storyline. Look, maybe get to Sami and Roman for Montreal. You know, I think Sami's from Montreal. If not, he's from close by. It'll be a huge homer crowd for him. You know, you can book that however way you want, but I don't think Sami's the guy to take it off Roman now. I think he's still built to Roman versus Cody. And maybe Sami plays a part in that match. I'm not saying you want any chicanery in the Cody title change. Certainly not. But, you know, maybe you get to Sami and Kevin Owens against the Usos for Mania. You know, maybe we get Sami and Roman at the pay-per-view in Montreal. And then that's finally when Jey goes back to the Bloodline and he costs Sami the match, or something like that, you know. But this stuff is good. I don't think it needs the title. I think people who want Sami to win the title, like, sure, is this program great? Yes. Has Sami been great? Yes. Has Sami been elevated from this? Yes. And I think that's the prize. Like, guys, like, does he really need to beat Roman Reigns for the championship to validate this whole thing? I don't think so. You know, I think he could even help cost Roman Reigns the championship, and that's enough. I think him and Kevin Owens could win the tag titles from the Usos, and that's enough. Guys, the WWE now has had the title on Roman Reigns for almost 2 years. Okay. Yes, there are definitely transitional champions. Sure. And maybe Cody will end up being one of those. Who knows? But I feel like we all know in our heart of hearts that Sami Zayn would end up being something alike to what Kofi Kingston was when he won the title from Daniel Bryan. And I'm not saying that that wasn't the right move then, because it was. But here, you have so many other options with this that I don't think the only way to validate the storyline is doing Sammy versus Roman at Mania and having Sammy win the title. You know, I think there are so many other ways you can pay this off. And I think that would be almost selling themselves short, the title picture short, and the title future short, to then have to put it on Sami Zayn. Because as Sami Zayn, he's great and he's a good in-ring performer, that's fine. But removed from this storyline, is he the flag bearer of the company? Is he the one carrying both belts? Is he the one then taking on Cody Rhodes in the next year? I do not think so. So you would then get it off him however you got it off him. And I don't think that's the move to put the title on someone in between Roman and who the next guy is. I think the next guy has to take the title off of Cody Rhodes. Now they're saying The Rock is maybe not is not wrestling at WrestleMania. Does that mean he's not involved? Could The Rock cost Roman Reigns the belt at WrestleMania and that sets up next year with The Rock and Roman? Maybe. I think so. I think that'd be nice. Maybe you have The Rock being some sort of a guest enforcer or something like that. That could be pretty cool. All right, let's get to some more sponsors, and then I have a myriad of questions. I think they're all great. And we're going to get to those after this break. Here we go. All right, last segment here on The Heel World. Thank you guys all for listening. As always, I want to hear your guys' thoughts on wrestling. So please slide into my DMs on Instagram at Scott of Jaeger. Hit me up on Twitter at Shot of Jaeger. Let me know. I will be light on responses for the next few days. I'm going on the Jericho Cruise. Full on Heel World recap of the Jericho Cruise, all the matches, all the stuff that goes down on the boat next week. So definitely stay tuned for that. Should be a good time. Let's get to your questions here. All right. Nathan, can you talk about your thoughts on Pat McAfee and his contributions to pro wrestling? So Pat McAfee, surprise return to the Rumble. Happy to see him back. I love his energy. Again, to go back to the Logan Paul thing, Pat McAfee is huge in the sports world right now with his radio show, appearing on College Game Day, other things like that. I think he adds legitimacy to the WWE, and he does so in a way that is actually, you know, he's a fan. He's passionate. He's good at what he does. So he, to me, is the commentator equivalent of Logan Paul. He's not as famous as Logan Paul, but in the sports world, he's very well known, and he brings a lot of credibility. So I'm a huge Pat McAfee fan. I'd like to see him in the ring again, but I like him mainly in the commentary booth. I think he's been great. Robbie says, who had the most disappointing use in showing in the Rumble? I would say on the men's side, I mentioned him before, Montez Ford. It's got to be him. I really think he could have at least gotten a good spot or two before he got dumped. I was really, really surprised to see him not make it further. I wonder why that is, but yeah, I was. And then disappointing use in that he wasn't used is I'm surprised Bronson Reed wasn't in the Rumble. I would have loved to see Bronson in the Rumble and get him some burn. So the fact that he wasn't in it, I thought was surprising and disappointing as well. On the female end, no one really jumps out at me. Trying to think. No one really jumps out at me as being underused in the female Rumble, which is a good sign. Even Chelsea Green, I thought, you know, someone's got to have that spot. And I thought it was cool. Bloody Money 47 says, do you believe that Cody Rhodes winning the Rumble got overshadowed by Sami Zayn? No, I don't think so, because I think they did it in the right order. So I think if you did Sami and Roman first, then that maybe would have hung over the Rumble. People would have wondered if Sammy was going to come out in the Rumble, and thus that would have overshadowed the Cody win. I think putting the men's Rumble first was brilliant. I don't think I would have done it any other way. Maybe put the women first, but I thought that the men's Rumble first, I got a tip that it was coming on first. Fightful posted it a few hours before. That got people thinking, oh, does that mean Dwayne's coming out in the main event? I kind of thought that it meant we were getting exactly what we got, which is the big storyline culmination with Sammy turning on Roman or vice versa. So I kind of correctly predicted and was mentally prepared for what we got, and maybe that helped. But no, I don't think it overshadowed it at all. Nightfall Podcast says, why there is no NXT representatives in the Men Royal Rumble? So, okay. So there were a lot of, not a lot, but there were a few NXT women in the Women's Rumble, and those women got a lot of action. I thought that was good. I expected to see a Grayson Waller. Shouts to Grayson, big challenge maniac. I sent him some swag. Good friend of Mark Long's. or a Bron Breakker. But here again, it's like if you can't give him the correct amount of shine, why waste it? I'll be honest, I haven't been watching a lot of NXT lately, so I really, my knowledge of NXT is that, like, you know, I've been following Grayson a little bit, Bron Breakker. I know that, you know, Carmelo Hayes, a lot of people like him. So Cameron Grimes, but it's like, who would you have put in here that you would have gotten to give a lot of shine to? And I guess since you don't have this room for it, I'm surprised, you know? So I thought the Royal Rumble, the men's Rumble was close to perfect. So I guess maybe, like, we talk about like surprises, like if you would have given an NXT guy an appearance, but also allowed him to go about 20 minutes, that could have been a nice addition. But again, is there enough to go around? Nightfall podcast again. Do you think Sami Zayn would be the one to dethrone Roman Reigns instead of Cody Rhodes? No, I don't subscribe to that. I think it should be Cody. But I love the Sami Zayn stuff. I love the Bloodline stuff. It's great. I just don't think I don't think that's what it's for. The real Steez after last night, from 1 to 10 confidence on The Rock fighting at Mania. The Rock wrestling a match, I'd put it at a 4 now. Looks like they could be swerving us, but The Rock appearing and getting physical, I'd put it still a 7. I do think we're getting maybe a setup angle for 40 in Philly, which, by the way, I've already booked Helium for Mania weekend in Philly, April 2024. I've already booked it, so lock it up. Challenge Mania Philly 2 or 3, I guess it'll be, because you know, next one's the 2nd. Last question, YH Pack, best long storytelling angle ever, if not top 5 or 10. I mean, it's in the best ever, definitely the best modern. I mean, like, as far as most impactful, obviously NWO, when it started, was amazing. And then obviously it kind of, you know, by the time Stevie Ray is in NWO, I think it jumped the shark. But yeah, I mean, that started off, I just think, the way it shifted the industry. Austin McMahon and things like that, you got to put in there. Of course, you got to put like Randy and Liz and things like that, the mega powers colliding. But I will say this about the Bloodline storyline. It is certainly the best long-term storytelling WWE has done in the last 15 years. I will say that confidently. All right, guys, thank you for tuning into the Heel World. As you can hear, my voice is a little bit gone. I've been under the weather the past few days, but I'm over the hump. Looking forward to fly to Miami tomorrow and see some of you guys. And then I'm off to the Jericho Cruise. So tune in next week for our Jericho Cruise recap. And congrats to Cody Rhodes. Congrats to Rhea Ripley. Congrats to Hunter for booking a great product. Even through Monday, I watched a little bit of Monday. I didn't get to see the main event, but Cody and Finn, I mean, love seeing them together. Hopefully they're doing it again. So, all right, everybody. Peace.
Scott Jaeger sucks, and he's a complete piece of shit.
The Challenge Mania shop is open. Head over to challengemania.shop today for the best way to support the podcast while looking good doing it. New designs and items added every few weeks. Maniacs, time to mobilize. Check out challengemania.shop today.